On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
I was telling our guest just a couple of minutes ago that I grew up in Daytona Beach and lived pretty close to the ocean, but based on the dire predictions of scientists and pseudoscientists and just celebrities, apparently my parents' house should have been underwater years ago. It's not. It's not any further away from the shoreline than it was when they moved there in 1962. What's all that about? Is there climate change, or mainly, are human beings the cause of climate change? Because that's really the key question, isn't it? To talk to us about that very situation is Greg Wrightstone, who is the author of Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. It's from Silver Crown Productions, LLC. Gregory Wrightstone is a geologist with more than 35 years of studying the Earth's processes. He has a bachelor's from Waynesboro University, a master's from West Virginia University, both in geology. He's presented the results of his research around the world, including India, Ireland, and China. And he is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. Our great pleasure to have Greg Wrightstone with us today to talk to us about climate change or not, and if so, why. Thank you, Greg, for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You managed to make me sound smart, and that takes some doing. But I get asked a lot, why? How did you get into this arena as a geologist? And I did it because I knew that some of what we were being told about climate change, I knew as a geologist and a scientist, and it was particularly ocean acidification, I knew it was just wrong. I knew it wasn't going to happen because it's never occurred in the past, even when CO2 levels were many times what they are today. At times when the CO2 in the atmosphere was at 8,000 parts per million. We're at a little over 400 now, and the oceans never became acidified, but yet that's what they want you to believe. So it was really a result of my personal search for the truth. And what I found was, frankly, it angered me. As I was going through each of these, you know all the cataclysmic things that are being predicted. Droughts, too much rain, not enough rain, too much snow, not enough snow, sea level rise, polar bears are going east, all these things. As I started getting into it, just looking one after another, what we're being told flew in the face of what the science, the facts, and the data showed. It's really been my mission over the last several years to get this information out there. People like me are stifled at reaching the general public. And again, I'm a scientist, and at the CO2 Coalition, we're a group of 70 of the top scientists in the world, physicists, atmospheric physicists, climatologists. Just Patrick Moore was our past chairman. He's a co-founder of Greenpeace. We have these brilliant scientists, and we all agree on one thing. The modest warming we've seen of about 0.8 of a degree since 1900, combined with increasing CO2, is leading to an Earth and its ecosystems that are thriving and prospering, and humanity is benefiting from that modest warming and increasing CO2. It's just opposite of what we're being told. And it's by almost every metric you look at, both the ecosystems and the human condition are improving. It's clearly shown by vegetation growth around the world, crop growth. Our crops are breaking records year after year after year, and a lot of it is due to increasing carbon dioxide. I mean, plants, obviously, that's one of the building blocks of plant growth. It's water, sunlight, and carbon dioxide. So it's really that again flies in the face of the daily mantra of what I call the climate apocalypse events.
I can recall about 40 years ago, the apocalyptic warnings were, we're going to head to another ice age. And by the year 2000, the world's going to be frozen over, blah, blah, blah. I've got to be honest, it's things like that, and hearing that completely reversed within 20 years, it's things like that that make people who aren't scientists a little skeptical. Invariably, the people that believe that the world is in terrible mortal danger always have a very good reason for that, which generally involves you can get money to study stuff if you say the right stuff when you study it. The whole idea of the 97% consensus, which we're told 97% of scientists agree on human-driven climate change.
I can tell you that's completely hogwash. It's just not so. We see with these brilliant scientists of the CO2 Coalition.
There may well be 50% of scientists or more that might agree that buy into this notion of man-made catastrophic warming. That might be possible. But it's certainly no 97% consensus. And in fact, the gentleman that did the study that references this 97% consensus, according to him, I would be part of that 97% consensus because I believe CO2 is increasing, and that increase of CO2 is causing some warming to the atmosphere. I buy into that. I agree with that. CO2 is a greenhouse gas and has a warming effect, but we believe it's very modest and greatly overwhelmed by the same natural forces that have been driving temperatures really since the dawn of time. And it's so we're, you know, I'm not a wild-eyed climate denier, but I buy into the many benefits of increasing CO2 and warmth.
For example, you talk a lot in the book about all of these different climate change events that have happened over recorded history and what they have done. The times that we were warmer than others are times of great growth and exploration and all sorts of things. First found out about this when I discovered that Greenland was actually green once upon a time because, it hasn't been green for a long time, and I just thought it was a PR thing that the Vikings did. But as it turns out, no, it actually was green. And then things started changing. It started freezing over, and that was part of the Little Ice Age?
Yes. And in fact, if we look at this, we're being told, oh my goodness, we can't allow it to get another degree and a half or 2 degrees warmer. We're going to have famine and pestilence, and we're all going to die. Well, I look back through time, back through human history and climate history. What happened in those other warming periods that were a couple of degrees warmer? I'll tell you what happened. Great empires arose. Humanity prospered. Food was bountiful. People didn't have to worry. They go by the names of things like the Minoan warm period, the Roman warm period, and the medieval warm period. Great empires rose up. People didn't have to worry about grubbing for their next meal or feeding their family. They had time to dream, to sculpt, to invent, and that's what they did. And we talk about these other warm periods. We know they were warmer for a number of reasons, just both historical data and what we're called proxy data that we look at to tell you the past temperatures. For example, you talked about Greenland. That was during the medieval warm period when the Vikings settled there. They were growing barley on Greenland, and you can't grow barley now because it's too cold. The growing seasons are too short. The Romans were growing citrus in the north of England. You can't do that today. And just things like that we know it was much warmer. And those were times of great plenty, of great abundance, of again, great civilizations rose up. It was the intervening cold periods that were horrific. Each one of those cold periods brought about famine, crop failure, pestilence, and mass depopulation consistently. So it's just opposite, isn't it, of what we're being told. We're being told, fear the heat. No. History, climate history and human history tells us fear the cold. Even if we look today, 15 to 20 times as many people die due to cold-related deaths as due to heat. Completely opposite of what you might hear in the mainstream media every day. So we could maybe assume that global warming saves lives because we'll have fewer cold-related deaths.
Boy, Al Gore's certainly not going to tell you that. Another point that you make in the book, Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know from Silver Crown Productions, LLC, is that idea that CO2 is bad for us is completely wrong. The idea that more heat is going to mean more droughts and more forest fires, which seems, if you're not really looking at the statistics, it seems like it might be sensible, but your science has shown that the more carbon dioxide you have, the fewer droughts that you have, and that forest fires are actually decreasing, even though there is a heat wave and somewhat of a drought going on across the western part of the United States right now. This does not mean that this is the harbinger of desolation yet to come.
Oh, absolutely. If we look at the drought in the Southwest over the last several thousand years goes through some periodically has gone through just terrible decades-long droughts. And in fact, in the early part of the late part of the 20th century, last 100 or so years, we've actually had an increase in precipitation over historical records in the Southwest. Well, maybe we're actually just going back to what's been commonplace throughout the Southwest of the United States, these periods of drought. And you're right, trees and plants need less water with increasing CO2. The greatest moisture loss to the plants is from, it's called, it's when the plants are breathing in and out. In other words, they're bringing in CO2 and expelling oxygen. When they expel the oxygen, they also expel water vapor. And so because they're not having to do that as much, they require less of this process, and they're using less water and need less water, which leads to soil moisture increase. In fact, Canadian Fire Service attributes their decline over the last many decades. And yes, the decline in Canadian fires, they attribute it to this increasing CO2. More soil moisture.
That brings up something else that you often hear cited as, here's another example of the world is frying to pieces, and that is that the polar ice is melting and this will kill off all the polar bears. But your research found in Canada and points north of Canada that this is not the case at all.
Yeah, actually, lots of ice it sounds contrary to what you've been hearing in the media, but lots of ice is actually bad for the polar bears because they can't access, they really fatten up in the spring when the seals, they go after those seal pups.
Right.
And there's just a lot, when we've opened water, there's just an abundance of sea life, a lot more to eat. And some of the, it's okay, polar bears can survive very well on land, and they do. And we've actually got, we're the largest number of polar bears today than we have in 60 years. And we can only go back about 60 years because polar bears are hard to count.
Yeah.
Because they blend in, of course, in a snowy environment. And apparently humans taste a lot like seals because we are on the polar bear menu.
Yeah.
It's not a difficult but a dangerous job to count polar bears.
And most of the time, polar bears tend to live a considerable distance from, say, large population masses of humans. You have no polar bears in New York City, for example, but a fair number of them way up north above the Arctic Circle, where there's not so many people. Another thing that I found fascinating, living in South Alabama and growing up in Florida, I can tell you that I've been through plenty of hurricanes, and every year the Weather Service predicts this will be the worst hurricane season of all time. And they always do that, and I blame the Weather Channel to a certain extent because the only thing they have to sell is apocalypse. You know, if weather's nice, what are they going to do? Get on and for 24 hours a day say, hey, it's still nice. Nobody's going to watch. But if they say, oh, you know, let's send Jim Santini out there and he's blown his hair off and everything else. Oh, he's barely able to live. Boy, these courageous fellas. Then we're all going to keep glued to the Weather Channel. There's not really been an increase of hurricanes in the last couple of years, right?
Oh, absolutely. Hurricanes long term are hard to count because so many of these hurricanes before the age of the satellites, they would start up and then dissipate. Nobody even really would know about them.
Right.
So NOAA and NASA say, well, what they do is they look at landfalling hurricanes continental United States. And they're saying, well, we can take this back to about 1850, because if a hurricane made landfall somewhere along the coast, we would know about it. And so they keep records of landfalling hurricanes. Those have been, we know for a fact, those have been in decline for really since the last 100 plus years or more. And it's just, again, it's just completely opposite of what we're being told.
And they're
we see
not
the same with severe weather.
Yeah, they're not getting more intense,
weather.
Right? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Correct.
I thought you were finished and I interrupt you. I beg your pardon.
And the
intensity is not getting worse, which we keep getting told it, that, oh, the reason global warming is driving hurricanes and cheesy movies have a lot of fun with that, and that's okay. But in reality, hurricanes are not getting more intense because of global warming, or alleged global warming.
Correct. In fact, Christopher Landsey is their NOAA's top hurricane. Isn't that a great name for a hurricane expert, Landsey?
I mean, really? That's awesome.
Almost as good as a geologist named Wright Stone, huh?
Absolutely.
He poo-poos this. He says maybe intensity has increased 1%. Well, if you've got a landfalling hurricane, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between 130 and 132 miles per hour. It's going to kill you just as easily if it's 1% more. Well, who's going to know that? That's beyond our capability to even measure a hurricane wind speed.
The number of tornadoes is declining, which is interesting because we seem to hear a lot more about it. But that's just because we're better able to report stuff like that, and not because there are more tornadoes.
Yeah, and the severe weather, extreme weather deaths in the United States have declined 99% since the early 1900s. 99% decline in extreme weather related deaths. Now, a lot of it is attributed to better predictions and better forecasting. You know, get in your basement, now there's a tornado coming, or you know, there's a big hurricane, it's category 5 and it's going to hit in 2 days. Well, people could get out of there and get, but think about this too. I'm calling you from Florida today. Joe Biden wants us all to drive electric cars. He wants to ban the internal combustion engine and have us all drive electric cars. What if 30 years from now we're all in our electric cars and a hurricane's bearing down on the Florida Keys? So now you got tens of thousands of people fleeing north up Highway A1A doing 10 miles an hour with their air conditioning on. They won't even make it to Marathon Key before they need to recharge. How are these people going to get out of there?
Yeah.
And the same thing with people in Montana, Idaho in the winter. Heaters just suck up. You know, maybe you get 180 miles for an electric car. Not in Montana in January, you're not. Or you better bundle up pretty good, because you run that heater, you're going to cut your mileage probably in half.
Now, two other things that you mentioned earlier, and I wanted to get back to those, is that you mentioned oceanic pH and CO2, but the ocean's becoming more acidic. What would it take for the oceans to be acidic enough that it would be dangerous?
I have no idea, because the buffering capacity of the oceans is almost limitless.
It's vast.
The oceans are firmly basic. They're basic, and what we see is just a tiny decrease in the alkalinity of the ocean, but just very, very small. And it could well be that this is just a cyclical trend. In my book, I capture this cycles over thousands of years of slight rises and fall, but always the ocean stayed firmly basic, never approached acidity. And so again, this is just more of this fear mongering. Anything they can grasp onto. They even talked about the condo collapse in Florida and Miami being blamed on climate change.
Right.
Completely irresponsible.
You have a very simple illustration in the book as to what happens when ice melts. And my wife, who's a mathematician, said it's a mass thing. Ice is frozen water. So the state changes, but the mass doesn't change. So if you have a whole glass full of ice, and you let it melt, it's not going to overflow.
As long as it's not resting on the bottom of the glass, it's floating. So yeah, you can melt the entire northern polar ice cap, and it would scarcely do anything to sea level. And that's because there's all the, think about the Titanic and the iceberg, that 90% or so of the iceberg is underwater. And as that melts, so the northern polar ice cap is floating on water.
Yeah.
And so you can melt that, and it will scarcely do anything. Sea level is primarily driven by glacial melt, land-based glacial melt. They use fear-mongering again when they have these ice shelves of Antarctica the size of Rhode Island just broke off. And, well, okay, it's an ice shelf that's floating on water. Same thing there. It's not going to contribute to sea level rise. And again, we see that sea level has risen 7 inches since 1900. That doesn't sound too alarming to me.
No.
Nothing we can't. I mean, we'll probably have another 6 or so inches by the year 2100. Again, it's hard to even, it's almost imperceptible to get that small amount of sea level rise.
Unless you're living on an island the size of a quarter, it's not going to make any significant difference to you.
Yeah. Oh, well, this is a good... So the United Nations in 2005 predicted that there would be 50 million climate refugees by 2010. Well, 2010 came and went, and of course, there are no climate refugees. They made another prediction in 2015, same 50 million by 2020. Well, that's come and gone as well. And in the book, I looked at populations of these. They listed 4 most at-risk island nations in the world, and I looked at the population there has been booming. People aren't fleeing these islands; they're flocking to them because they're beautiful islands. And one of the Maldives was one of those. Well, if you Google hotels Maldives, you'll find articles there. There are 17 either recently built shoreline hotel complexes or that are under construction. Well, equity companies are funding these. Insurance companies are insuring them. Insurance companies avoid risk like the plague.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the insurance companies are putting their money and their risk on insuring these seaside complexes that are what the UN says are most at risk from sea level rise. It doesn't make sense. They're voting with their money and their pocketbooks.
So what drives all this climate apocalypse? Is it just they can get a grant to continue their research? Are they pandering to the people that want to hear, oh, we've got to all go to tiny little cars that we pedal and that sort of thing? I mean, really, who benefits from all that unless it's conceding more and more power to the government?
Well, I get asked that regularly. I can't see inside men's and women's souls to what their motivation is. My role here is to say they're lying to you. This is what they're telling you, and this is what the science shows. And, you know, why they're doing it? Is it funding? Is it money? Is it control? Some people say, well, it's they want to bring down the capitalist system. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but the lies are being told. Just look what's going on now. They're spending trillions of dollars to fight a non-existent problem. There is no climate crisis. There is no climate emergency. The Republicans are complicit in this. They should be fighting this tooth and nail. And the Republicans are saying, oh, well, we can't spend $3.5 trillion to fight climate change. Let's just spend $800 billion. No. $100 is too much. 1 cent is too much. It's what they're calling it a solution. I call it a solution in search of a problem because there is no problem. The Earth is benefiting and thriving.
Now, how has your book been received so far?
I published at the end of 2017. It's been a number one bestseller on Amazon for most of that time, at least one or two categories. As recently as 3 weeks ago, we were a number one bestseller on Amazon. Well, it helps that we had Candace Owens, the conservative black commentator, that on her podcast, she held my book up. She says, this book, she recommended the book for everybody in America to go buy the book. She said, this book has changed everything I believe about climate change. She said, every child in America needs to read this book. And, of course, that did great things for book sales.
Yeah.
And in fact, I just authorized another 6th printing. We're waiting for it. The inventory, somebody, I think it was probably Amazon, we don't know. We just had a draw of an additional 900 books just yesterday, between yesterday and today. So we're down to a few hundred books in inventory, and I'm hoping our next printing gets there in time. Because the book is, we've sold out of books 3 times over this period.
Wow.
We just get these big black swan events, you know, if I go on Laura Ingraham or a big show, something big happens. Like when I have a smartphone app, whenever they took the first time we sold out of books, which it doesn't happen very often, but we rolled out our smartphone app, which is just search for inconvenient facts, the Google Play Store or the App Store. I rolled it out on the Glenn Beck show. 2 days later, Apple removed it from the App Store. So this was the number one story on Drudge the next day. Geologists, climate change app taken down, Apple weaponizes the App Store, and that just led to just huge publicity for the book. So we're going to, if you want to buy a book, you better do it soon. I'm not sure when our next printing, I authorized the sixth printing here 2 weeks ago. It takes 45 days for it to go through the system.
Wow.
So I've been blessed.
That is terrific. Well, I'm delighted to hear that people willing to read and to see your research, which is substantial, footnoted and graphs and everything, as I read through it. And I'm not a scientist. I'm just a guy who's interested in science, but I am also a guy that I have a high BS ability to note when I'm being fibbed to. And there's been something about climate change all along, a man-driven climate change all along, that just sounded bogus. And it's really nice to be able to find a resource that can help you back up your gut instinct with actual hardcore evidence. So, Greg, it is a fascinating book, and I no doubt that you'll sell out all of your sixth printing as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm about halfway through writing my second book, but my work at the CO2 Coalition is getting in the way of that.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. We've been talking to Greg Wrightstone, the author of Inconvenient Facts, the Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know, from Silver Crown Productions, LLC, soon to be in its sixth printing. And you can also check out the smartphone app Inconvenient Facts and get for more information. A website, can folks go to like inconvenientfacts.com or anything like that?
Inconvenientfacts.xyz. Okay. We're building a new website. The CO2 Coalition is co2coalition.org. And we do accept donations, so co2coalition.org. I'm excited. We're, again, building out this new website. It'll be awesome.
Terrific. Thank you so much. When you get your second book written, I want to talk to you again, okay? Although, to be fair, I may call you back when you get to the seventh or eighth printing on this book, and we'll just chat it up again.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Once again, we've been talking to Gregory Wrightstone, the author of Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know, from Silver Crown Productions, LLC. Now in its fifth printing, soon to start its sixth printing. He is a geologist of more than 35 years and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. Once again, you can check out inconvenientfacts.xyz. Also, look for the smartphone app Inconvenient Facts in your smartphone App Store. Thanks so much for joining us on The Bookshelf. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until next time, thanks for listening and God bless.